sometimes you hear a piece of Tanakh, you read a piece of Tanakh, and say, okay, that's an interesting story, let's move on. Sometimes you hear one, and it's just like, you know, I got to look further into this. And so last Shabbat, we got a teaser. At least last Shabbat here in Chutz Laretz. Anybody here coming from Israel who's already a parsha ahead?
No.
All right. You already fell back, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So in the Haftarah Parshat Naso, we read the story of Shimshon, but we didn't really read the story of Shimshon. We read perhaps one of the most bizarre prakim in all of Tanakh. And that is Shoftim Perek Yud Gimel. If you want to take a look, Shoftim Perek Yud Gimel, we're going to talk about this particular parak, we're going to talk about Shimshon, but the truth is we're going to talk about all of Sefer Shoftim. It's all going to be within like 25 minutes, it's not going to be long. But all of Sefer Shoftim, because Shimshon presents a real challenge in studying the parasha. And I just want to preface by saying it's a real honor to be able to teach in this very holy place in Beit Midrash of Machaneh Stone with you guys. In Perek Yud Gimel, we have an entire parak about a hero who does not appear until the last pasuk. Why? What's the parak about?
His origin,
what we call, if we're in a different camp with different signs outside, we call it an annunciation. That's what the Christians call it. There's an announcement of the birth of a savior, and there's a big deal done about it. But besides the fact that in the end he turns out to be a miserable failure, where else do you find, looking at that later, where else do you find that there is a big announcement about somebody about to be born?
Shmot,
who's we born? Shmot?
Shmuel.
Is there an announcement about him being born?
There's a origin story.
There's a background story, there's a tefillah, and then he's born, but that's sort of bottom up. That's Chana praying, and then the result is that. This is an announcement by a malach. So Yitzchak, very good. So Yitzchak is the big deal. I get a kick out of that, that's my name. Yitzchak is the big deal in Bereshit because Avram and Sarah are old and they don't have kids, and the whole Yishmael experiment didn't seem to work out very well. And so Hashem says that Sarah is going to have a kid and you name Yitzchak. What's Yitzchak supposed to do, by the way, based on the Nevuah? Just be there. Right, and hopefully have kids and be the next link in the chain. In other words, Yitzchak doesn't have any particular programmatic job that's part of that announcement. It's just there's a problem of infertility and a problem of, well, God promised a big nation, so how do we connect the two? All right, so there's going to be a child. But there's nothing else about that. Is there anybody else who's an announced child?
Jesus.
But in our testament, I know they'll claim that it's here too, but their claims are pretty bizarre. However, you have actually hit on something that is accurate. If you look at Yeshayahu Zion, what?
Annunciation.
Oh, no, it's fine. That's fine. I actually asked for that. In Yeshayahu Zion, there is a whole nevuah, and kiven yitam lanu, yelad yulad lanu, right? The ayam, Yisrael, shichmo, v'karashmo, v'poel, pele, yoetz, el gibor, v'yad, sar shalom. Great, great prophecies. Who's it about? It's either about Chizkiyahu, it's about Yeshayahu's son. It's not clear who it's about, but it's also about somebody who gets all of these names that are supposed to happen. There's not a whole lot list about what's going to happen. And it's Sacha called 2-3 Pesukim. Here we got a whole parak where the whole thing is about an interaction between a malach and Mrs. Manoach, and then a malach and Mrs. Manoach, and then plus Manoach. And a lot of instructions. We'll have to see what those instructions are for a kid. This is unprecedented. So question one is, what's Parak Yud Gimel all about? And that's the one we read for the Haftarah, interestingly enough. All right, so then I'm going to ask you a separate question, which is, what is Shimshon's career all about? So to talk about that, we have to step back and look for a moment, and I assume that everybody here is generally familiar with Sefer Shoftim as a Sefer. Sefer Shoftim is made up of three parts. The first part is the presentation, which is essentially saying, you know Sefer Yoshua? Really cool. Happiest book in Tanakh, hands down. Steamroll, with the exception of 36 men at Ha'ai, okay, and in a near civil war that was averted. Otherwise, Yeshua's got the single most successful career of any leader in Jewish history. No question. Sefer Shoftim says, time out, there's some stuff I forgot to tell you. All right, that's why when I teach Sefer Shoftim and put on workbook, the cutesy English name is The Dark Side of the Moon. because Yeshua is Pnei Levana, the Gemara and Balbatra, Pnei Yeshua Pnei Levana, and this is like the dark side of that period. Because Perak Aleph Shoftim says, by the way, here's all the place we didn't inherit. And it goes to Shevet by Shevet by Shevet, starting with Yehudah that inherited everything, then Beit Yosef, and then Ephraim didn't inherit this, and Manasseh didn't inherit that, and Zvulun didn't inherit that, and Saul didn't inherit that, Asher didn't inherit that, and Naphtali didn't inherit that, and by the way, Dan inherited nothing. Pretty, pretty paltry, pretty sad. And then we hear about the Shoftim cycle. The Shoftim cycle is that Bnei Yisrael, that's not true, a tribe, Bnei Yisrael, but the way it happens is, a particular tribe gets involved in Avodah Zarah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sells them down the river, they get oppressed by somebody, they're oppressed for anywhere between 8 and 18 years, 20 years, 40 years, then they finally cry out, not tefillah necessarily, they cry out, and God sends a shofet. What's a shofet? How would you translate a shofet? So you would think, judge, tell me who, which of the shoftim does any judging in this book? The most likely candidate, oddly enough, is Devorah, but even that's not so clear. But in the meantime, what do all the other shoftim do? So if you want to take a look in Shoftim Perek Bet, you have Pasuk, Vayakim Adonai Lahem Shoftim Vayoshium. So what's the job of the Shofet?
To save them.
So the word Shofet, actually just as a side point, is very much related to the word Shevet, because Pei and Bet are interchangeable in Ivrit. Look at the Ramban at the beginning of Parshat Ekev. And a Shevet, what's a Shevet?
Tribe.
What else is a Shevet?
A staff.
Why are the two words the same? Because the tribe is the group that coalesces around the guy holding the staff. Same reason Mateh has both those meanings. So a Shofet is a leader. A Shofet can be a leader on a Beit Din, but he can also be a leader in war. And so the best title for these guys is really chieftains, except for the great Irish group that already stole the name. So instead we'll call them the guerrilla warfare rebels, whatever it is. All right, the rebels. And they lead these rebellions against the oppressing nation. And through either a miracle or through really great strategy, Ayin Gidon, we win the war, the villains are gone, we do well, and perhaps we even stay loyal to God as long as the Shofet is alive, or not that long. And then at some point we go back and, you know, the cycle goes back. And that's the presentation in Perek Bet and beginning of Perek Gimel. Perek Gimel until Perek Tet Zion is what we call Aliyot HaShoftim, the stories of the Shoftim. And it goes through Otniel and Ehud and then El Shamgar and then, Dvoran Barak, and then Gidon. And by the way, you'll notice that they get less and less successful, because after Gidon, you have this kind of, Gidon himself in his life seems to mess up. And then afterwards, we have the terrible tragedy of Gidon's son, Avimelech. And then we have Yiftach, who seems to be pretty good, except his name is Yiftach because he opens his mouth too wide and his daughter falls in. Remember the story? He ends up killing his own daughter. Really weird. And then it doesn't even want worse than that, is that he ends up leading a massacre of 42,000 members of Shevet Ephraim. Remember in Perek Yud Bet? They can't say Good Shabbos, so they massacre, right? Shibolet. It's really terrible stuff. And the last guy on the whole list is Shimshon. Now, you might say, well, he's the last guy on the list because that's the order in Shoftim, but it's not so clear because Shoftim is not chronologically accurate. How do I know that? Because what at the end of Shoftim, after we've done the introduction, the stories of the Shoftim, of which Shimshon's the last, there are two stories. One? Pesel Micha, Pilagish B'Givah, which are so awful, terrible, rotten stories. Pilagish B'Givah is a gory story, and it ends, and the anthem of those stories is the anthem of Sefer Shoftim. Bayamim Ahem, Ein Melech B'Yisrael, Isha Yashab B'Nav Yaseh. It's all hefker. It's the best argument for a king is that we don't have a king and everybody's like messing up and doing terrible stuff. And the story of Pilagish B'Givah is so terrible that there are no names there except for one. And this is why I'm saying it's out of order. What's the one name in the whole story of Pilagish B'Givah? Pinchas, who leads the war against Shevet Binyamin. So Pinchas, by the way, lived when? He is Yoshua's Kohen Gadol, right? At the end of Yoshua's time, which means that's early in the Shoftim period. Since Sefer Shoftim is not organized chronologically, so what's the organization? It's trying to teach a message. Which means Shimshon being at the end may not mean he was the last, but he's where we want to end up with, because maybe Shimshon is emblematic of the whole period. Okay. So we're going to talk about Shimshon, but I want to ask you some very detailed questions, because believe it or not, the devil is in the details. And in our case, the light is in the details. Sometimes piecing together very small detailed questions or minutiae can help open up a very big thing. What was Shimshon's mother restrained from doing according to the directive? What was she not allowed to do?
Grape products.
What? Grape products? Show me grape products. Let's take a look. Let's look at the text. Perek Yud Gimel. Okay? It is in Pasuk Dalad. All right, the Malach comes up to her and says, "Behold, thou art barren." I said that because I saw the neighbors. Right, Yamish. Right. V'atai shamrina. So you're about barren, you're going to have a child. Right? Ishamrina v'altish deyayin v'shechar. So what's she not allowed to do?
Drink wine
or any other alcohol. V'altochli kol tameh. What does that mean? Does that mean she has to keep some higher level of tahara? Or does that mean she can't eat non-kosher food, which would then mean, well, what is she normally eating? Unclear. Why? Kihinacha, what? What?
I just always assumed it was hulin b'tahara.
Yeah, okay, that's a nice assumption. Very, very bad, very benefit of the doubt here. But what is tamei in Parshat Shmini? Right? Yeah, okay. Kihinacha rav yoladet ben. Why is this? Because you're pregnant, you're going to have a child. Umora lo yale al rosho. Which means? Can't cut his hair, right? Kinezir Elohim yanar min abaten. Because he's going to be a Nazir Elohim. Now, who he's going to be a Nazir Elohim should mean what laws should apply to him. Which are A, grape products. Not just wine, but grape products, including grapes. What else? Tumat mate and hair cutting. Good. What's the one thing that the Malach says to her? He may not cut his hair. Kinezir Elohim Yemen Abetan. Okay, I could say that from there. Okay, the wine, the Nazar, etc. What's he going to do? He's going to start the battle against the Plishtim. Is that going to be with smart bombs from an office thousands of miles away? I don't think so. How's that going to happen? How's he going to be out battle the Plishtim? How would anybody battle anybody in those days? Hand to hand. If you battle somebody hand to hand and you win, what happens to them?
They die.
And if they die, you become Tameh. The Tumat Mate of Goyim, only according to one obscure Shita, doesn't apply to Mag Al Masa. The exception is Tumat Ohel. Right? Goy is Metame with Mag Al Masa. Right? You touch a dead Goy, you're Tameh, Tameh Mate. Right? So, it's as if it's being written in, he's going to be a Nazir, who's going to be Mitameh. And Chazal understand it that way, which is why in the second parak of Masachat Nazir, we have this institution called Nazirut Shimshon. And if somebody says, I'm not saying this, but if somebody says, Harayni Nazir Shimshon, then they're bound to not drink wine or cut their hair, but they can be Matami Lamait. Except according to Shimon, who says, they're not a Nazir at all, because Shimshon wasn't a Nazir. We're going to see about that. He has it for a different reason. Okay, so what is Shimshon bound by? Not doing what? What? The hair, okay.
And
Yayin V'Shechar. Okay.
And his mother being
a kosher. Well, yeah, that's not his problem. That's his mother's problem. Okay, now, here's where things get a little hinky. Take a look at when Manoach says to Hashem, please send the guy so we can find out what's going on, which means Manoach does or doesn't believe his wife. So it's a little unclear, because if he doesn't believe his wife, what's he asking for? Please send the guy who never showed up. Right? So he does believe his wife. Does believe his wife, then why does he need to repeat? She's not sure about what?
About the details?
Maybe the details, exactly. And by the way, his wife indeed did leave details out, because if you take a look in Pasuk Zayin, she says to him, Hinach harav yolad ben, v'atal tishti yan v'shechar, v'altochli kol tumak, kinezer alim yan arm in abetan. What two critical things did she leave out in her recounting it? That the tumah is there. V'altochli kol tumak. The Nazir, she says, haircut. What two critical things does she leave out of what the Malach told her?
Haircuts
and Plishtim. In other words, according to what we're told, because we hear the Malach talking to her, Shimshon is going to be some big war hero, and this is all part of the prep. According to what she tells her husband, we're being blessed with a child, and there's a special instruction of Mammon, he's got to be Nazir. No information about, by the way, about what anything he has to do, but I can't drink wine. Manoach asks to see the Malach. So he finds the Malach shows up, of course, to the wife, and Manoach goes running off following his wife. Vayelech Manoach acharei ishto, famous line. Right? And take a look at Pasuk Yod Gimel. Vayomer Malach Adonai Manoach, because Manoach asks what should be the law of the kid. Mikol asher amarti el ha'isha tishamer. How do you translate that? Mikol asher amarti el ha'isha tishamer. Okay, so tishamer, you're reading a second person man, masculine, right? Menochach zachar, meaning you have to keep what I told her also, which means all the laws I gave her, I give you. Or some people read it as third person feminine, which means I'm just repeating what I said. Everything I told her, she should keep. Right? The truth is that at this point, we could read it either way. Although you could then ask the question, why does the Malach have to reappear at all? And why does he have to repeat and just say, she has to do what I said she has to do? That's a little bit strange.
I'm sorry, how can you read this as a second person?
Tata, atati shamer. What are you asking? How could you read it as which? Which is... My tishamer is second person, nifal. You should be avoided from. That we have that throughout the Torah. Hishamer lecha pen. That's throughout. Mikol asher yitzei megefen ha'yan lo tochal. What does that sound like? You or she? It sounds like you. V'yan shechar al teisht. I think the al is a slam dunk, which is it's you. Thou shalt not. Okay, so I'm going to read this as saying, suddenly Manoach, and this by the way goes to the very famous adage, don't ask too many shilas because the answer will always be a chumra, but then Manoach comes back and says, what should the Mishpat HaNar be? And notice that the answer has nothing to do with the Nar. Then the answer has to do with suddenly you. And everything I told the wife, I'm telling you. Now, let's go back and ask a question. Why do we assume the wife has to avoid wine?
Senate.
She's pregnant and she's got this nazir cooking inside. She wants to make the nazir. She grows up in a wine-free environment. She's got wine allergies. I don't know. Okay, I'm kidding. But why Manoach? If she's already pregnant, Manoach's already done his bit. I'll ask a second question. When does her isur and now his isur stop? When are they allowed to drink wine? What would you assume? After the baby's born. In which case, you got to really wonder, what is his? Why is that, does he have to avoid wine?
Not tempt her to drink wine.
Very interesting. So he can't go to the corner bar, right? Because she might be tempted to drink wine, and so now it's a siag, right? Okay, interesting. But where do we find here that she's suddenly allowed to drink wine when he is born? I'm going to make you a little crazier here in a minute. Okay. Remember, he asked, "Ma'yam mishpat hanar umaseu." He didn't say, "What do we have to do?" He said, "What does the kid have to do?" And the whole answer was about you suddenly have to avoid wine. By the way, can she eat grapes?
Yes.
Sure, it certainly sounds like it. It's wine specifically, unlike the parsha in Nazir itself, which you read last week, which said, "Kol mishasher mitzvei mi'avrayami." Right? How do you call it? Anavim, lachim, ve'vishim, lo tochal. Here, it's only specific on the yain v'shechar.
But he has.
And she's not the Nazir.
Why would she? She
so have so why does she have to avoid wine? But she can eat grapes. And now what do we think about Shimshon? What's his deal? What's up with him? What's Shimshon going to be bound by?
Nazirut,
which means he can't do what?
All
the grapes and wines. Very good. Please turn to Perek Yud Dalet. I agree with you. Look at Perek Yud Dalet. Okay? Take a look at Pasuk Yod. Okay, actually, let's go back a little bit further. Go back to Pasuk He. Shimshon goes down to Timnah three times. He goes down to Timnah, meets a cute plishti girl, goes for her, head over heels. Right? Then he goes to his parents, and by the way, notice what his parents say, because remember, Sefer Shoftim, keep this in mind, it's all about tribes, not about a nation. He goes up to his parents and say, there's a girl in Timnah I'd like to marry, and what do they say? You can't find a nice girl from Shevet Dan. Important to note, you can't find a nice girl from Shevet Dan. Miacha, miachecha, oh, from the rest of the nation, but it starts with that. So they go down to Timnah again, and they go through a. Vayavo ad karme Timnata. What does that mean? Where'd they go? I got news for you. If I'm bound by God's explicit word to avoid grapes, I'm not going to walk through a karam, unless there's no other way to get to Timnah. Timnah surrounded by karmim on all sides. I don't know that to be the case. So why would a dafka walk through a karam? After all, the Gemara tells us exactly the opposite advice. Schor schor minu l'nazira l'chamer lo tikra. We tell a nazir to walk around a kerem, not to walk through. And here he walks right through the kerem. Very strange. All right. But take a look at Pasuk Yod. What does Shimshon do when he gets there? What? He makes a mishteh for his wedding. What's a mishteh mean? Drinking. It's a party, but it may involve drinking wine. So if you want to assume from it that Shimshon's making a party for his own wedding and hosting his 30 members of an entourage who's going to do the riddle on, which is a whole different shir, and has this big mishteh, but he's not drinking anything? A little bit strange. But let's ask this. What is Shimshon's final downfall? Give me one name. Delilah. What happens? They're playing their games, and Delilah says to him, what's your strength? He says, oh, attendant. Oh, put on attendant. Plishtim alecha Shimshon. Boom. Okay, come on, tell me the truth. Okay, chains. Right, put chains. Right. Plishtim alecha Shimshon. Boom. Okay, come on, tell me the truth. Okay, looms. Put my hair in the looms, 7 looms. All right, and you'll take away my strength. Okay, she does it. Plishtim alecha Shimshon. Boom. She goes, oh, da, da, da. And starts bugging him like crazy and making him nuts until finally he says, in gulachti, v'sam meni kochi, if you shave my head, I'll lose all my strength. Ki nazir alim Elohim ani betani mi. I'm a nazir from birth. All right, and then Delilah saw ashigidla et kol libo. He told everything the truth. She told the police to get the money ready. I'm ready to get him, and it works. Why doesn't he just turn to her and say, "Give me a sip of shabli, and I'm gone"? I want you to take a look very carefully and tell me what Shimshon is actually bound by. What? That's it. The only thing that Shimshon is bound by is the hair. There's no reason to think that Shimshon is bound by the wine. Because first of all, even his parents are not bound by the classic Nazir avoidance, because grapes aren't, sorry for the pun, on the table.
Manoch
is on. Manoch? Where? Anavim. They get meshe itzei migefrayan, meaning the product of it.
You won't eat it. Why you? Yeah. It says mikol asher itzei migefrayan lo tochal.
Uh huh. Yeah, actually, in this particular parsha, achilah and shtiyah seem to be mixed together. But that's. Yeah. Okay. So it's possible. It's possible. It's an interesting possibility that maybe Manoach even has a bigger chumra over his wife that he can't eat grapes, but Shimshon doesn't seem to be bound by it at all. And the Tumat Mate's not even on the table, which means when we hear the word Nazir here, we can't think classic Nazir, because right away Tumat Mate, which may be the biggest thing in a Nazir. Let me ask you, Nazir is bound by three things. What's the only one of those things that if a Nazir violates it, he actually has to start his Nazirut over? Tumat Mate. If a Nazir cuts his hair, if he had a try, he gets Makot, but that's it. If a Nazir drinks wine, he gets Makot, but that's it. His 30 days are up when his 30 days are up. But there's a whole piece of the parsha of Nazir is, v'chiyamut meit alav v'feta pitom, v'naflu yamim rishonim, v'plu yamim rishonim, ki tamei nizro, and then they start over. Tumat meit seems to really cut to the core of it, and he's not bound by tumat meit at all. So this kind of Nazir must be a little different. Maybe it comes from the word nezer, which is related to Nazir. What's a nezer? There's a crown. It could be that that's how we view the hair. It's like a crown he's wearing. But in any case, that seems to be the issue. So we can ask the question, if Shimshon is only bound by the hair cutting, what's up with his parents on the wine? And maybe the grape. What's up with that? Why are they bound by it? So we'll leave that question for a second. I want to talk about Shoftim in general and why I think A, Shimshon occupies such a large piece. Shimshon is the most famous of the judges. You ask, Jeopardy, Bible for 500, Alex, right? He was the famous judge with the long hair. Who was Samson, right? They're never going to ask, except on Chidon HaTanach Jeopardy, they're never going to ask, who was the one who slew 600 Plishtim with a cattle prod? So who was Shamgar, Alex? Nobody's going to ask that. But Shimshon, everybody knows. Right? And he has the biggest piece of Shoftim. No Shofet takes up as much space and press. And yet if you think about it, Shimshon is an abject disappointment. He doesn't lead a battle at all. the most that happens is he kills a bunch of Plishtim, and all of those deaths are not as a result of leading a war, a rebellion, but rather personal vengeance for behavior towards him, and then his wife being taken away from him, and the Plishtim hit him, so he eats them back. And then finally, and perhaps the saddest story, the saddest pasuk in the whole Parshat Shimshon is that when he dies and he takes 3,000 Plishtim down, the pasuk says, "Rabim asher imit b'chayav me'otom asher imit b'chayav." He killed more people in his death than in his life. That's not a good thing. It means the whole career didn't work the way it was supposed to. So what's going on? So let's go first to the details, and then the Sefer Shoftim, and why Shimshon plays part of place. What is the promise given to Shimshon, given to his parents? You're going to have a kid who is going to be a physical superman. He's going to single-handedly take on the Plishtim. And Rabotai Ugvirotai, since that doesn't work, when does it come back to bite us? When's the next time that we find one person challenging a whole nation? Shmuel. Goliath. Who represents whom? The Plishtim. It all comes back. Shimshon has been given amazing strength. Amazing strength that has to be used in the right way. The stronger you are, the more protected that strength has to be. We recently mourned the loss, or lamented the loss, of somebody who turned out to be a pretty good guy in the end, a guy by the name of Muhammad Ali. And a lot of people were really inspired by him. And one of the things that, as a kid growing up and hearing about Muhammad Ali and seeing some of the fights, one of the phrases that always came about was that his hands are licensed to kill. They're regarded as a deadly weapon. In other words, if he would hit somebody, if I had hit somebody and something happened, so it would be negligence of some sort, perhaps. Maybe battery, depending. If he would hit somebody and cause damage, it would be assault with a deadly weapon. Because he's that powerful. That's what Shimshon is. Shimshon is a deadly weapon. But if Shimshon is a deadly weapon, it has to be kadosh, because the more powerful you are, the more risun there has to be, the more restraint there has to be. So you're going to raise a kid who's so powerful. How do you raise him with restraint? What do you do? You give him models of restraint. So what do his parents have to do? Avoid wine, which is the common drink throughout the Middle East all the time. So his parents have to, not wait until he's born. Until he's born actually doesn't make a difference. It's after he's born. That's the big problem. He's going to be in the zero Elohim in Abetan, and therefore you guys better avoid wine and tumah. You better show lives of restraint. So he learns restraint from his youth, growing up. Does it work? It does not work. How does every one of Shimshon's... There's two cycles in the Shimshon story. The first cycle starts with his lusting after this girl in Timnah, and then as a result of the whole riddle, he goes and kills 30 people in Ashkelon and leaves the house. She's given away to another man. He comes and attacks their fields. They get mad that the fields are attacked, so they kill his original wife and her father. He then takes vengeance on them and goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. End of Perek Tetvav. Vayishpot Yisrael Asurim Shana. Second cycle starts with Shimshon going to a Zona in Aza. And then Shimshon and Delilah. So Shimshon never really takes the fight to the Plishtim as Plishtim, takes the fight to the Plishtim as vengeance for stuff that all starts with his lusting after foreign women. Not the hero we were looking for. It didn't work out, which means the restraint didn't happen. So why is Perek Yud Gimel there? Perek Yud Gimel is there actually to talk to us about the whole period, and the rest of Shimshon talks about the whole period. What was the period of Shoftim? Well, let me take it one step back. Sefer Devarim is the blueprint for living in Eretz Israel, correct? It's Moshe Rabbeinu's farewell speech. I'm not going in, you're going in. Here's what you got to do. What's the first thing we got to do when we come in? First thing we got to do when we come into the land? Got to go to war. Get rid of all of the pagan people, all the pagan worship sites, destroy all, Asher, Arim, 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 Agvot and Nisaot, get rid of all of them, Tachat Kol Eitz Ra'anan, and subjugate anybody who we don't want to kill. Rizal, what will happen if we don't? You're going to end up interacting with them and intermarrying with them, etc., etc. Kind of what? Okay. And now, does Sefer Devarim envision a single nation? It does not. Sefer Shoftim envisions 12 nations. how is government set up in Sefer Dvarim? All of government is presented in one parsha. It's parshat Shoftim. How does Shoftim start? Shoftim, Shoftim, Ten Lecha, Bechol Sharecha, Asher Adonai Lecha, Ten Lecha, Lishvatecha. There's the Beit Din HaGadol of Shevet Zvulun and the Beit Din HaGadol of Shevet Asher, and they've got their own government. There's a single worship spot that we all come to, Hamakom HaShevivchar. But otherwise, it's all tribal. And what happens at the end of Sefer Yeshua after we conquer the land? What do? Everybody goes, Ish L'Nachlato. And that's how it's supposed to be. That's the ideal. That's the big promise. How well does that do? That promise is a big failure. Such a big failure that the end of Shoftim is Bemi Mahem Ein Melech Bi Yisrael Yisher Shavin Av Yaseh, and therefore we need a Melech, and Sefer Shmuel of course takes us to the Melech. So Shoftim is about tremendous hopes of an ideal life. They come crashing down. It doesn't work. We have to change the plan. Shimshon is the microcosm of that, an individual upon whom great hopes were pinned. That's why Perek Yud Gimel is so important. And great hopes had to be accompanied with great restraint. And since the restraint wasn't there, the hopes fizzled out. And that's why Shimshon is so big, and that's why Shimshon is placed last, because the Sefer Shoftim spirals down until finally Shimshon is the catastrophe, which then we tell the two stories, Pesel Micha and Pelegesh B'Givah, that are emblematic of the whole period. And so what we did, we started out by asking the question, why is Perek Yud Gimel there at all? This whole big annunciation doesn't exist anywhere else. Because it's really telling us something about Sefer Shoftim, that there are great hopes that we have. The great anticipation of everything Moshe Rabbeinu said in his farewell speech. And Sefer Shoftim comes crashing down. And that's what this story is about. The great hope pinned on Shimshon. Shimshon, Alex Trebek is right to make Shimshon the star of Sefer Shoftim. Because he's really kind of emblematic of what the whole period's about. We took a look and noticed that there is no real prohibition on his parents to perhaps about the grapes, but there's no prohibition on him to drink wine. The one prohibition on him is cutting his hair, and somehow the hair has to do with his strength. And that's the only prohibition that he has. And finally, what's his undoing? A woman bugs him enough until finally he gives it up, and she cuts his hair, and that's the end of it. And it's as if it's a micro version of everything that Sefer Dvarim foretold. If you do not extirpate the pagans, you're going to end up marrying them, and that's going to go to Avodah Zarah. And parenthetically, where does Shimshon die? In Beit Dagon, in a temple of a pagan temple of Dagon. And so the big story of Shimshon is a big story in the sense of warning, and a big story of hopes that come crashing down. And so perhaps we have a little better insight, not only into the specific story of Shimshon, but into the larger book of Shoftim. Any questions? Yeah.